Why are moralism, mysticism, and speculation enemies of the Christian faith? Find out with the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for November, Broken, 7 Christian Rules That Every Christian Ought to Break as Often as Possible. It's written by regular guest Pastor Jonathan Fisk. You can browse before you buy at issuesetc.org, or you can pre-order Broken by calling Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040. Broken, 7 Christian Rules That Every Christian Ought to Break as Often as Possible.
Either you abide by your religious convictions and you violate Obamacare, or you abide by Obamacare and you violate your religious convictions and free exercise of religion. There's no in between.
You talk about the purpose-driven life. You say in the book, it's not about you. Who is it about?
Well, it is all about God and His plan for us.
Just use plain, simple grammar. If the book is about you finding your purpose, the book is all about you.
The caffeine for the waiting Lutheran is the means of grace that keeps us awake and vigilant and filled with faith waiting for Jesus.
Indiana truck drivers love Issues Etc.
Everyone can see it coming. It seems almost inevitable that religious rights and the advocacy for same-sex marriage are going to meet, and perhaps even at the Supreme Court. Now, it's often in the media painted as though this is simply a right-left issue, and those who want same-sex marriage do not care about religious liberty at all. Is that true? Have we painted with too broad a brush, and are there voices there that care about both what they would call marriage rights, and, in fact, yes, even religious liberty? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in on this Wednesday afternoon, November the 28th. Terry Mattingly of Scripps Howard News Service and Get Religion joins us for the first half hour of the program on this Wednesday to talk about religious liberty and same-sex marriage. A little bit later, we're going to conclude our series on failed attempts to reach God with Pastor Jonathan Fisk, author of the book Broken, 7 Christian Rules That Every Christian Ought to Break as Often as Possible. We'll talk about prosperity, the worship of change, lawlessness, and how it is that God really reaches us. That's coming up a little bit later in Hour 2 of Issues Etc., actually beginning in Hour 1 and stretching on into Hour 2. Terry Mattingly is a regular guest. He's director of the Washington Journalism Center at the Council for Christian Colleges and Universities. He writes the weekly On Religion column for Scripps Howard News Service, and he's founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Glad to be here. Hope you're having a blessed Advent.
You as well. Should the advocates of same-sex marriage be concerned about religious liberty, and are they?
Well, some are, and some aren't. Some are careful about religious liberty issues, and some are openly hostile. This is one of those situations where you can't talk about what we're preparing for at the level of the U.S. Supreme Court and think of this issue only in terms of strictly left and right and strictly pro-gay rights versus non-gay rights. I think you'd have to say that there are people who are pro-same-sex marriage, whether that's a part of a consistent gay rights agenda or whether it's just, you know, an individual issue concern. I think there are people who are pro-gay marriage who are still convinced that America, without a strong First Amendment that protects free speech on this issue, that protects freedom of association on this issue, and protects religious liberty on this issue, that's not the America that they know or want to know. Yet, in addition to that, they know that this court, in the decades following Roe v. Wade, is very aware that it could create a legal situation in the United States with conflict about the diminishing of religious liberty, the diminution of religious liberty, that could make Roe v. Wade look like a picnic. So I think there are definitely people in the gay rights movement who don't want to pick that fight because they live in the United States of America. We have the First Amendment. Religious liberty is the first freedom. Freedom of conscience is the first freedom. Why pick that fight, especially since they know the court is going to be so careful?
on that one.
Is it only a pragmatic concern about whether it's a winner or a loser with this court, or is it also a broader concern, to be fair here, that they realize that there is something fundamental about religious liberty that may not attach to other liberties that we recognize in our system?
Well, yeah, the problem is you just can't use the word they, because there's so many individual voices, so many individual positions. This is an issue in which there really are people that have very complex and diverse points of view. I mean, let's back up a second. The cases involving the Boy Scouts, I think it's important to realize that there have actually been some, not many, but some gay rights supporters and even gay rights groups that filed on behalf of the Boy Scouts being able to continue to disagree with homosexuality and yet retain their freedom of association. And that's because there are people who realize that once you take away freedom of association from one group, at what point does the government then begin to question the freedom of association of other groups? In other words, I think there are genuine liberals who are worried that they don't want to set precedences that are essentially unliberal. It's a question I've been asking among journalists lately. I don't know, just speaking as a journalist, just speaking about language and labels, and anyone who's ever been to getreligion.org knows that most of us are obsessed with this whole issue of trying to avoid inaccurate labels, in religion coverage, that you simply can't put this in a only left or right perspective. It just they break down. The labels don't work.
So can you explain to me kind of in a simple way why it is that is how it is consistently framed in media coverage?
That it's consistently framed how?
Right and left.
Oh, it's right and left because politics is God. I mean, to most journalists, politics is journalism of what's actually real. Religion either isn't real, or it's fake, or it's quasi-real, or it's real for fanatics, but it's not for rational people. I mean, you have all these different positions, and we're back to the issue of why the press struggles with religion at all. It's framed in terms of left and right alone, because that's the way it looks like, say, during a presidential campaign. Politics and the labels of politics just don't work when you're dealing with people who are acting on doctrinal motivations that transcend this century, this age, this political system, whatever. I mean, pin a label on the Pope. Pin a label on Dorothy Day. Pin a label on Mother Teresa. Pin a label on Billy Graham, for that matter. Doesn't work.
Is anyone, to kind of break up the, try and break up the general label of the left or the advocate for same-sex marriage, is anyone on that side of the debate saying kind of the extreme case that religious liberty needs to bow to the liberty of redefining marriage?
Well, that's, once again, there are several positions over here, but the reason in my column this week why I linked this to the HHS mandate is because one of the things we're seeing is a kind of consistent argument in this White House and in the Justice Department currently that there are kinds of two levels of religious liberty. Now, in the HHS mandate, we see that as religious groups are exempt, but groups are not exempt if a significant portion of their ministry brings them into contact with the public. Thus, we've had immediately people have raised the issue of what is the religious liberty status of, say, religious colleges and universities, religious counseling centers, religious adoption agencies, homeless centers, all kinds of ministries that face out into the public, yet do so for doctrinal reasons. We've seen in the HHS arguments, we've seen people arguing that it's okay if you keep your religion in the church, but the minute you get outside the doors of the church, that's where we're not so sure that you have the same level of religious liberty, maybe you have some sort of secondary level. Maybe it's only partial. Maybe it bows to other realities where the government has more at stake, such as contraceptives for everybody, including people who have voluntarily chosen to go to Catholic schools or work for Catholic organizations, should still have free contraceptives, you know, paid for by the Catholic Church. We've seen that kind of thing happen. Now, what I'm wondering and what people I've interviewed are wondering is, to what degree is that same framework, religious liberty is fine in the church, but it's not so good outside the church, what if that approach is applied to same-sex marriage? This is why it's kind of awkward and disturbing to see so much press coverage that focuses on, well, gay marriage is okay because the laws promise that no clergy person is going to be forced to perform same-sex unions. How often have you seen that language in press coverage?
Everywhere.
Well, the problem is nobody thinks that clergy are going to be forced to perform liturgical rites of same-sex unions unless it's a part of their belief system. That's not an issue with anyone. That's a straw man. The issue, once again, is what happens to religious liberty claims affecting religious groups outside the door of the church. What happens to campus evangelical groups at state universities? What happens to counseling centers? We can run back through that entire list. The issue is, what is the definition of religious liberty outside the doors of the church? Or as one source I interviewed for this column said, nobody's worried about the wedding ceremony itself. Everybody's worried about what happens after the wedding. What, in other words, does the state use its power to coerce believers into recognizing the validity of unions that they do not consider to be legal or moral or whatever?
Terry Mattingly is our guest. We're talking about religious liberty and same-sex marriage on this Wednesday afternoon, November the 28th, when we come back. Does the church need to get out of the marriage business? Would that solve anything? We'll be right back.
Hello, this is Pastor Kevin Golden of Village Lutheran Church in Ladue, Missouri. The saints at Village Lutheran are proud to be part of the Issues Etc. 300, sharing in their Christ-centered, cross-focused proclamation of the gospel. If you find yourself in St. Louis, join us on Sundays at 8:15 and 10:45 for the Divine Service, 9:30 for Bible study and Sunday school, as we receive Christ's gifts of forgiveness, life, and salvation. Or visit us on the web at www.villagelutheranchurch.org.
What happens when you take solid doctrine and solid curriculum and combine them with ancient scholars and modern technology? You get Wittenberg Academy, the very first completely online classical Lutheran high school. We are unabashedly Lutheran and offer families a rigorous standard of academic excellence. Students can pick and choose classes, or they can utilize our entire curriculum for their high school education. Visit our website, wittenbergacademy.org, to find out more.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Resurrection Lutheran, Detroit, Michigan. Bethlehem Lutheran, Parma, Ohio. St. Paul's Lutheran, Lockport, Illinois. Faith Lutheran, Columbus, Indiana. Glory of Christ Lutheran, Plymouth, Minnesota. Good Shepherd Lutheran, Arnold, Missouri. Peace Lutheran, Sussex, Wisconsin. Our Redeemer Lutheran, Cedar Falls, Iowa, Zion Lutheran, Moberly, Missouri, and Elm Grove Lutheran, Elm Grove, Wisconsin. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, and click support. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll advertise your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. Journal, issuesetc.org, click support, the Issues Etc. 300. Welcome back. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. Terry Mattingly is our guest. We're talking about religious liberty and same-sex marriage. I suspect much of this you probably will not hear elsewhere, that there is actually a voice, many voices on the left, who are concerned about both things, and they're wary about infringing upon religious liberty, not only because it may not be a no-winner in the Supreme Court, but because they might actually be concerned about religious liberty. Now, Terry, on the other side, many say that the solution here, or a solution here, is for the church to get out of the marriage business. But does that come close to solving the problem?
Well, and we have that in Europe, of course. Like, say, the last week I cited the example of the Netherlands. I mean, where you have the civil ceremony, and then you have a sacramental ceremony. And quite frankly, there are a lot of conservatives. I kind of lean this way at times as a doctrinal conservative, that think that wouldn't be bad. But that to kind of draw a bright red line between what is the sacramental claim of holy matrimony versus what is this kind of essentially legal and cultural arrangement that's called civil union or civil marriage or whatever. I think it would be good if the church realized that these are totally different things and the public square have to be defended for totally different reasons. The problem is that taking that bold action, as George Weigel, the conservative Catholic thinker, recently did, he said the Catholic Church should get out of the civil marriage business, stop signing the certificates. Well, that's a bold statement. It's a prophetic statement, even, but it doesn't solve the legal question of what happens when the state redefines the relationship.
Doesn't it, and correct me if I'm wrong, Terry, but to your thinking, doesn't it also concede that bifurcation of religious liberty? You got your liberty, your freedom to worship, and then you got your general religious liberty, which should be viewed as two different things.
No, I don't think it concedes that at all. I think what it concedes is that how the church has defined marriage, and frankly how Judaism has defined marriage, or even Islam has defined marriage, that's different than how the secular state defines marriage. So I think you can settle that issue on its own and make your prophetic witness there if you wish, but it doesn't settle the legal issue and it doesn't settle the religious liberty issue. I don't see those as being quite as much related. The religious liberty issue is the key in the United States under the First Amendment, and thus the members of the court must be sitting here looking at this thing going, are we ready to get involved in this yet? Now, there are the people I quote in my column, and I had pages and pages of similar letters and opinions from people who are pro gay marriage, but are urging gay rights organizations and urging those who support gay marriage to think twice before they pass these bills without strong, sweeping protection for religious conscience, both in church, both out of church, and even in the private lives of individual believers who happen to be like people who do wedding photography or who bake wedding cakes or other types of things that might get linked to the issue of same-sex marriage. They're saying, don't pick this fight. Don't make the court have to rule up or down on the entire issue with the religious liberty issue in the middle of it. In other words, don't go there. We don't need to go there, and it would be better in the United States not to go there. The ultimate question, though, is to what degree are there people, either on the political right or the political left, or the religious right or the religious left, who are willing to agree to each other, gays and lesbians have a right to the legal privileges of marriage. We will concede that, says the right. And the left, in return, says, and we will concede that under religious liberty, you have a right to A, disagree, and to act on it in the public square in meaningful ways.
Okay.
Who's willing? Who are the people of goodwill on both sides of that divide who are going to meet, have those dialogues, have those negotiations, and make that compromise?
So
where
you,
are they?
You've made the case that there are people of that nature,
yeah,
on both sides of the debate.
But there are some on the left, and I'm hearing that there are also people there on the moral and cultural right as well. I chose in my column to focus on two voices coming from the left.
But given the framework that we've talked about here with respect to how it is oversimplified, to put it in an oversimplified way, is it possible for those voices to actually meet and resolve the issue? Or is it going to be fought out on the left in the left-right framework for the worst possible consequence?
I honestly don't know. I mean, put yourself, I don't know, standing before the board of Focus on the Family and say that you'd like to go ahead and have the organization change its position on same-sex marriage as a legal matter, not doctrinal, legal, with the understanding that there are powerful gay rights groups that are going, in response to that, are going to swing their allegiance to a full protection of conscience and religious liberty. What you're going to hear is, do we trust them? Do we trust these people to keep their word? How do we know this compromise will last? How do we know? Which once again brings us back to the only venue in America that really matters, which is the U.S. Supreme Court. And as Molly Ziegler-Hemingway once said, and I've quoted her ever since, we live in Justice Kennedy's America, but he lets us live here.
Is that inevitable? Is it inevitable that the court, is the Supreme Court, is ultimately going to face this question on both of those venues, HHS or something like it, and same-sex marriage, and have to make this decision?
I believe it is. I don't see how they can avoid it. Here's where you get into the politics of the court. If you're looking now at four more years of Obama, if you're a conservative, do you go ahead and want that case now? Or do you want to let a few chairs open and close on the court? Do you gamble by pressing one of these cases right now, thinking that Justice Kennedy might be convinced? Or do you let a few more people retire and change, yet with Obama in the White House? You see what I'm saying? Do you push the button now and risk it? Meanwhile, on the court itself, Justice Roberts has shown an inclination to try to avoid conflicts. And above all, this is a man who does not want major issues settled on a 5-4 vote, right? He's shown plenty of evidence that he wants to avoid those divisive votes. Do you think he wants to redefine the First Amendment of the United States on a 5-4 vote? Will he dare take the case?
You mentioned,
I have no answers.
You mentioned Molly Ziegler-Hemingway's quote about Justice Kennedy's America. What do you think she meant by that?
She meant that right now that's the vote that ultimately matters, and that we don't really know what he thinks. I mean, we know he's kind of a liberal, inactive Catholic. We know that he seems to lean right on economic issues and seems to lean left on social and moral issues. But she just literally meant, we live in America right now that's being defined by 5-4 votes on the U.S. Supreme Court. And that everybody knows who that vote is in the middle. It's his country. Does the court right now want to take on the subject of same-sex marriage and the wider subject of the civil rights status of homosexual identity? Do they want to take that on and settle it on a 5-4 vote? That's when people say, if that's what they did, and we got a major change in our understanding of religious liberty, free speech, and freedom of association on a 5-4 vote, it would make Roe v. Wade look like a picnic.
And what do you mean by that?
I mean just major social unrest, all kinds of lawsuits. I guess if you want to go into full-scale paranoia and as either a joke or say it with a wink or whatever, then you start talking about all those motions at the White House for secession by Texas and other states. I mean, at some point you begin to wonder, at what point does the fabric of America break down? Back to the journalism question that I raised briefly but and then forgot to finish. I've asked many journalists at this point, what do we call people in journalism, in our stories, in our writing? What do we call people who are not strong on religious liberty, not strong on freedom of association, and not strong on freedom of speech? I don't know what we call them, but I'm having increasing problems myself referring to those people as liberals. Because isn't the essence of our traditional, classical definition of liberalism, wouldn't that begin with like a strong defense of free speech, freedom of association, and religious liberty? Isn't that what it used to mean to be a liberal? That's a journalistic question that I don't have an answer for right now. There's many in this talk that I don't have answers for.
Terry Mattingly is director of the Washington Journalism Center at the Council for Christian Colleges and Universities. He writes the weekly On Religion column for Scripps Howard News Service, and he's founder and editor of GetReligion.org. Terry, thank you very much for being our guest.
Thank you. Hang in there. We'll be talking about this again, I'm sure.
All right. When we come back in the second half hour of Issues, Etc., but stretching into the second hour for the remainder of the program on this Wednesday afternoon, November the 28th, we conclude our series on man's failed attempts to reach God. We've talked about moralism. We've talked about mysticism. We've talked about rationalism. We've talked about pragmatism. And today we'll conclude the series with Pastor Jonathan Fisk, author of the book Broken, Seven Christian Rules That Every Christian Ought to Break As Often as Possible, talking about prosperity, talking about the worship of change in the church, lawlessness, and then finally, to answer it all, how it is that God really reaches us. Not we reach him, but he reaches us in Jesus Christ through his word, through his means of grace. The conclusion of our series on man's failed attempts to reach God with Pastor Jonathan Fisk right after this. Folks, there are 5 weeks left in 2012, and we're $63,000 short of making budget this year. Please consider making a year-end tax-deductible gift to support this worldwide outreach. You can contribute by check, make your check payable to Issues, Etc., and send it to Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also make an online donation at issuesetc.org. Thanks for listening, and thanks for thinking of us at the end of 2012.
Steadfast Lutherans, people who believe the traditional Lutheran preaching, liturgy, and hymnody continue to deliver Christ crucified for sinners today. The Reformation attempted to return the Church's focus on what we do for God back to a focus on what God does for us, that Christ died for our sins in accordance with the Scriptures. Some things never change. The gospel is still under attack from inside and outside the Church. To see how Lutheran doctrine and practice preserve the gospel, visit steadfastlutherans.org.
Does your church need a backup organist? The virtual organist service from Church Music Solutions is the next best thing to an on-site organist. Send us your musical choices, including liturgy and hymns. We'll assemble your service and send it to an iPad that controls your church's organ on Sunday. The result is genuine organ leadership on your instrument with your selections when you need it. See our videos on YouTube or visit our website at churchmusicsolutions.com.
Logia, a journal of Lutheran theology, is a quarterly publication for the Confessional Lutheran, and they have a special 20th anniversary CD. This CD contains every issue of Logia for the last 20 years. It's a PDF file with search capabilities and bookmarks. This special anniversary CD is an excellent addition to your theological library. You can pre-order it for just $40. That's 50 cents per issue. Find out more at logia.org, logia.org.
Smartest listeners in radio. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
South Africa.
China.
Germany.
Trinidad and Tobago.
Did you know that people listen to Issues, Etc. around the world?
India.
Sweden.
Egypt. France.
Turkey.
Japan.
Australia.
Canada.
United Kingdom.
Hong Kong.
Austria.
Finland.
Malaysia.
Singapore.
Bulgaria.
Korea.
Brazil.
You can support the worldwide outreach of Issues, Etc. by making a secure online donation at issuesetc.org. You can also donate by check. Make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio and send it to LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Help us proclaim Christ to the world.
The Philippines.
Mexico.
Spain.
New Zealand.
Kuwait.